kind of doing a prelude to what we were talking about prior to you hitting the record button finally.
I'm never prepared.
I know. She was asking me about what was going to be going on here in the next few days for me, and I was telling her, I'm like, well, I finally got a day off from work, so me and Mom are going to go and chill and have, like, a mommy-daughter day and just kind of relax by the pool.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I know, right? Like,
so you get to see your mommy,
uh-huh.
And I just saw my mommy, yeah. Both of my mommies.
Both of your mommies.
Wedding is fastly approaching. At the time of this recording, I have 35 days till I become Mrs. Starr. And I just had my bridal shower yesterday.
That was so much fun.
And Ashley just helped it go off without a hitch and was, like, taking over.
You guys are giving me way too much credit. Because even your mom, like, Debbie and Andy gave me way, way too much credit. I just was like, nobody's doing... Andy's in her own world. Debbie looks like she's about to have a panic attack. And just, like, public speaking is not apparently Debbie's forte. So I'm like, you know what?
Just took over like a natural. And you could just see the look of relief on my mom's face. Like, oh, thank God. Someone else is doing this. But at the end of the day, like, everybody that helped out did such an amazing job of making me feel, like, just so special and said, like, such nice things about Ryan and, you know, all
there's
the
some really great stories.
Oh, my gosh, the hilarious stories about the time that Ryan didn't know how to plunge a toilet and cat-sitting stories and cat just, stories. Yeah, cat-dying stories. Yeah. It was such a fun day.
Yeah.
And all of the people that... truly, they just showed that they truly cared by coming out, you know, giving up that
day to celebrate you.
Yes.
And your amazing, you know, journey in life, and you're starting a new journey.
I know.
So, you know, we should celebrate that.
I got so many, you know, fun gifts, and it was so thoughtful, and it's just making this experience really fun. So thank you to you for saving the day. Aww. And for our amazing, you know, gifts, and just for everybody that came out, thank you.
Yeah.
And
the after party was so much fun.
Yes. You want to tell everybody what we did? We got crazy.
Yeah, we got crazy, let me tell you. So for the after bridal shower party, the girls that went to, I guess we're now called the Chicago Girls or
Chicago
something?
Girl, Travel Girls. Travel I don't know. We're going to come up with, like, a name for us.
So there's five of us in the group, and anytime we get together, I feel like shenanigans just go down.
Yes.
Because we're just those types of women where we're just like, we're going to do something crazy. Yeah. Let's do this. You can't put five of us in the room together. You just can't.
So we did Chicago about a month ago.
Yes.
And then yesterday, Ashley made us appointments for something.
At your request from Chicago, you, on the drive back, you're like, I want to get my nose pierced. And, like, a ripple effect came through the car. And, like,
I want an ear piercing. I want a septum piercing.
Yeah. I want all blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? This just sounds fun. Why don't we, you know, after your shower, because we'll all be there, we'll go and we'll all get piercings together. And that'll just be another fun bonding moment, which... I feel like your wedding has allowed us to do this,
yes.
Honestly, because we would not have probably all come together if it hadn't
And
been.
I'm so happy, though, because, like, basically the group is Sierra and Melissa, who are my oldest and just closest friends from high school. I've known them forever.
Yeah.
And we all grew up in, like, the New Pal area. And then Ashley and Abby are my friends from college. And so until now, those two groups had no reason to mix. But now we're traveling and getting piercings. And, of course, they're all in my wedding. So
yes.
Just, I like this group, though. That's all of us get together. We all have very similar personalities. Well, okay, not similar in the way where we all have complementary personalities. I'll say that.
Because
we are definitely not similar. But it works.
So you have all these women coming together and, you know, it's a real bonding moment.
Honestly, that's my favorite part of the whole getting married thing, though. I mean, because some of it I don't love as much. I haven't had as much time to read lately.
Mm.
I haven't had a whole lot of time to, you know, clean the house and do little things because it's filled with this thing and this thing and this thing. So I'm very excited for it to be done. But I'm also very excited to figure out what you've been able to accomplish book-wise, because yeah. I have not. I'm slacking. So yeah. You are taking torch for me.
Yeah. Today's book, honestly, I feel fits in so well with the wedding theme, because it is a Hindi, South Asian book. It's called Dating Dr. Dil by Nisha Sharma. Sorry.
Listen, I think that's a beautiful name either way that you just pronounced that.
I don't know about you, but I love Shakespeare. I love Shakespeare retellings. I thrive off that. And my favorite Shakespearean story is The Taming of the Shrew, just because I just emulate with Katharina
yeah.
so much as an independent woman who is struggling within a society to, you know, overcome the norms of the world. And Dating Dr. Dil is a retelling The Taming of the Shrew, set in the backdrop of California, and you have that Asian influence, that Indian influence, because you have nosy aunties.
Oh, I love that.
During wedding season.
What was the book turned movie that I really like?
Which one?
I didn't read the book, but I saw it on Netflix with you. Crazy Rich Asians. Was that a book? That was a book first, right?
That is a book.
Yeah, I did not read that one, but I really, really, really like that one.
So that would also be considered South Asian vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, South Asian means like Singapore, Thailand, kind of India a little bit.
Okay.
But you're thinking about that part of the Asian continent when you say South Asian. Or Japanese or Vietnamese people who have immigrated from those nations to California, because that is actually something that is quite popular over there. And this retelling is all in the backdrop of that. You have the main character who she's very opinionated, she's very headstrong, and she has lived her life in a way that most people in that culture would not agree with. Okay. She put her career first. She doesn't really feel like she needs to date, or, you know, she needs to have a boyfriend or a husband. But due to circumstances that arrive, her sister is getting married, and she has that pressure on her that, you know, you're the oldest, but your baby sister is getting married. On top of that, your dad now has decided to sell your childhood home because there's really no point to keep this big house. Your grandmother is thinking about going back to her homeland. Your dad really doesn't want this big a house. He wants to downsize. But this is your childhood home. This is the home that your mother has built from the ground up, that she has been refurbishing
mm-hmm.
as she goes. And she also has her mother's car. That's like a classic car. I don't know what the model of it is. It's kind of like a James Bond car.
Okay.
If you had to think of it. And it's just, so you have all that like really upfront in the book. Basically, we're given that all within like the few chapters to kind of set the stage.
And so she's very comfortable with the lifestyle that she's leading, but yeah. Everything is changing now.
Yeah, no, she is. It's very much going, okay, hang on. You didn't even tell me that, you know, you are selling the house. Well, I didn't want to tell you because you would have just gotten upset. You know, you have these like idolized ideas of, you know, your mom and this house, and, you know, I didn't want to deal with it, is the dad's like whole reason for this. And the grandmother has all of it, basically just told her, I'm like, you know, you never see anybody. There's no reason. Why would you want a house? Like, you're not even seeing anybody. And so that's kind of where we start the story, which if you compare it to The Taming of the Shrew, is very, very similar. You have the plot line of The Taming of the Shrew is that you have two sisters. One wants to date and be out in society. The other one, the oldest one, Katharina, doesn't want anything to do with that. She doesn't. And her father pretty much goes, well, here's how we're going to solve two issues one way. the youngest can't do something until the oldest one does it. So when Katharina dates, you can date. And if you're getting weird vibes off this, listeners, and you're like, wow, this sounds a lot like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Literally, that's what I was thinking the entire time. And I was like, I know the plot of this story.
Mm-hmm. That's because...
Her name is even Kat.
Yeah, that's because 10 Things I Hate About You is a 1990s retelling of The Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, God, okay.
So basically, if you watch the movie, you'll know exactly what happens in this book. And that's, and unfortunately, guys, that's why I'm not getting into a lot of details. Because if you're familiar with the story, you know how this plot is going down. It's just going to be a lot of
repetitive, yeah.
It is a lot of repetitive. The meet cute, though, between the between Kat and the main gentleman, whose name is Prim, and his surname is Dill. So he has a show for South Asian viewers that's called the Dr. Dill Show, which in their language means doctor of love.
Okay.
But he despises love. He thinks love is not lasting, that it actually does more harm to the heart than anything else that you could do to yourself. Like, it just doesn't last. It's harmful to you as a human being. It makes you sick, like actually physically sick, and he has like medical information to back it up. Okay. Yeah, there were things that he goes through where it was like he was like, you're more likely to die of a quote-unquote broken heart syndrome than you are from like drinking or smoking. And I'm just like, really? There's actual like,
yeah, I find that hard to believe.
Clinical evidence of this.
I'm also not a doctor.
Right. I was just like, and it was bizarre. It's really, really, that was bizarre in that understanding. But, so, Kat has found out all this information and basically has been given kind of an ultimatum. Either you buy the house from your dad, which costs an exorbitant amount of money that you cannot have, and you technically you could buy the house if you were to get engaged, because the father has money put aside for each daughter that is equal to the sum of what she would need to buy the house.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be for her wedding. So Kat is sitting there with her best friends and they're drinking and she's just like going over this, and she's just like, this is ridiculous. I'm never gonna be able to get this house. You know, and they're just like, well, what if you pretended to get married? And they're like, and Kat's like, yeah, no, there's no way. I want a love match. I don't want an arranged marriage. Well, Prim is also at the bar at the same time, and he's out with his buddies, and he has just been told that he has been given financial stability to go start building his clinic for the Asian community. He had a partner that we know a while back who she died of a congenital heart issue that could have been fixed and managed if she was allowed to get treatment for it. Mm-hmm. And so that's like his driving motion, is that he needs to make sure he has money for this clinic. And his biggest supporter finally greenlit it, and he's getting this money. So they're out celebrating. And Kat's friends have to go. They have to leave and do something. So they leave her at the bar, and she's still wallowing in self-pity and stuff. And Pin's dudes that he's with, you know, realizes, okay, you keep making googly eyes at this lady at the bar.
Yeah.
We're piecing out, and one of the guys is like, look, I have a case settlement I have to do in the morning. I'm leaving. The other gentleman actually owns the restaurant that they're at, so he's like, I gotta go back and make sure everything's going smoothly. Yeah. Y'all have a good time. And he goes up, and they start having a conversation, and you know, they're hitting it off. Everything is great and great and grooving really, really well. And they start making out, and it escalates to the point where they use the his bro, since it's one of his friends owns the restaurant, they're like, start making out in his office.
Oh, good lord.
And, like, Prim goes to pull Kat's sweater vest off, because that's Kat's, like, go-to clothing. It's a sweater vest on top of a long white blouse.
Okay.
Sometimes she mixes it up color-wise, but that's typically what she wears. So he goes to pull the sweater vest up over her head, and it gets stuck on her earrings. And she's has her hands up in the air. The sweater vest is up. They're kind of giggling because they're both drunk.
Yeah.
But then Prem's phone starts going off. And it's the 911 distress call number within his family that they use when it is an emergency.
Yeah.
And Prim just goes, I'm sorry, I have to take this. And just leaves. Just goes, runs out the
door.
While
her sweater is still above her face.
Yep. So Kat's just standing there going, okay. And Prim just, like,
bolts.
So Kat's just, like, there for a few minutes with her arms up in the air, her sweater vest up over her head going, yeah, I don't think he's coming back. And so she, like, wrangles it down and she just ends up leaving.
Yeah.
Prim does go back to look for her. After he realizes it's not an emergency, my mom just called me on the emergency line to be a jerk.
Wow.
Because she just really wanted my attention about something. I don't know what, but that's what it was. And he tries to go back and look for her, and of course, Kat's no longer there. So he's just like, well, it would have possibly been a one-night stand, which would have been a bad decision. Glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Moving on. And that's what they do. They go and move on with their lives for a tiny bit, and... Kat's sister is a YouTube influencer in regards to makeup. So she gets invited the next day to come on to a show. And she rings in Kat to go with her. And Kat has a hangover because, of course, last night she's boozing it up.
Yeah.
But she, you know, because she's a good sister, she says, okay, fine, I'll go. So she goes with Kat to the studio, and she finds out, oh, okay, my sister's gonna be on the dating or on the Dr. Dill show. Great, whatever. And she's trying to, like, make herself not get hungover, so she's drinking Pedialyte. Which, side tangent note, I have never in all of my years of boozing ever had the notion to drink Pedialyte to try to not be hungover.
I never knew about it until I got with Ryan, and Ryan swears by it. Oh. Now we do the liquid IVs, and if you guys have ever had them, first of all, they're disgusting. They have the texture of snot and just taste like salt. But you will not be hungover 20 minutes after you drink that. It is the end all, know all to hangover cures. But before that, he swore by Pedialyte. They always had some in the house.
Really?
Yes. I never thought about it. Yes.
Did it work? Did you try it?
Oh, well, I went straight to the liquid IVs. I mean, I trust the process. I watched all of them drink it. Because I've never been as big into partying as they are. Not that they're like alcoholics or anything.
No, they're Irish.
It's just they can drink.
They can drink.
And I cannot. So I usually end at like 11:30. But yeah, they swear by it, and I totally believe it, but the liquid IV has been a lifesaver for me.
Yeah. So, Kat's drinking Pedialyte, trying to get over her hangover. She's sitting there watching her sister be on this Dr. Dill show, and Dr. Dill comes out. And Kat's go, wait a second, I know him. He's the guy that left me in his bro's office with my hands up in the air and my thing over my head. And she starts listening to Dr. Dill and her sister have this conversation. And Dr. Dill is very different than what Pim was at the bar. So Pim was very much into the whole, like, lovey-dovey romance, you know, meeting your soulmate. Dr. Dill, on the other hand, is saying all this shit like, you know, love is just, you know, a fleeting thing. Nothing can come of it. You know, compatibility is literally just whether or not you can hold a conversation with your partner. You know, sex is just an thing. You know, love comes and goes. Like, it's never going to last. And this pretty much sets off Kat. And Kat just decides to call Dr. Dill out on his shit, because this can't be the same guy that just talked to me about all this romantic bullshit, and then you're just spewing this? No, 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 my friend. So Kat starts going berserko.
Like, during the... Yeah. During the shooting?
Yeah. She starts screaming and saying that he's a liar, that how can you believe all of this when you told me blah, 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 blah last night? And the cameras are rolling. Like, they're rolling. And through this whole argument, and I'm going to just, you know... You guys can pretty much guess how the argument's going. It's going, yeah. She's going nuts. And he's going right nuts back at her because this is his livelihood. At the end of the argument, she chucks the Pedialyte at him. And it, Nisha Sharma depicts it as going slowly through the air. And as such, she chucks it. So, like, she's, like, not, like, throws it, but, like, you know how you hold the ball in your hand, you go like that?
Yeah,
so
and you, the, only the liquid comes out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she does. And you just see the liquid, like, cascading from the bottle and just landing with a whoosh all over Dr. Dill. And she storms out. Her sister had been recording all of this via her Instagram.
Yeah.
The actual, like, cameras within the studios, it doesn't say whether or not they shut them off, but it's kind of ambiguous. I don't think they did, to be honest.
But they're definitely not using that for air. Like,
it sounded like everything was live.
Oh.
Yeah. The Instagram, I knew it was live. So, Kat is livid. And she goes back home. And she's just like, I can't believe this baloney. Blah, 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 blah. And her sister pretty much blows up, like, how could you do this to me? You know, that was my
life. Of course.
My moment to shine. How could you do that to me, Kat? And basically what happens is that this meet cute going into the next day meet cute blows up. To the point where Prim loses his sponsorships. The banks pretty much go, okay, yeah, we're not giving you the money anymore because we believe in family beliefs and you don't really seem like a family man to us.
Wow.
So we're not giving you the money to build your clinic, which your community really needs. But if you can prove to us that you're a family man, we'll reconsider. So, and because of everything blowing up online over him and Kat, Prim pretty much gets this idea of, okay, if I can get Kat to, like, kind of almost, like, retract what she says.
Then people will believe me again.
Then people will, my sponsorships will come back, I'll get my money, I'll be able to build the clinic. So they keep interacting with each other, kind of like that. And things ensue. Just like in The Taming of the Shrew, things ensue. Basically, they're put into a situation where, you know, this benefits both. If we pretend to be engaged, you get the money from your dad, you can buy the house that you want. This is your mother's house that you want, you can buy it. I will get credit back into our field, I will get my sponsorships again, and I will be able to, you know, build this clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wins. Everybody's happy. We all get what we want.
We don't actually have to get married in the end.
Yeah, we'll say something happened and we'll split it even, you know, we'll break up prior. And from there, it literally, I'm not saying retellings are bad. Some retellings are really great. Sometimes they'll add little bits and pieces in there that aren't in the actual story. And then there's some like this that are pretty much a straight retelling almost.
Yeah.
So, like, they start going on dates. But because of Kat knowing that, you know, this isn't a real relationship, this isn't a real tangible thing, I want a backup. And that's kind of all, she always reinstates that to Prim all the time. You know, you're not really serious, you don't believe in this, you don't believe in love matches. Like, I'm going to keep dating and seeing other people too on top of this. And Prim really doesn't like that idea. He's like, look, we really should just keep it between us. I, you know, it works better if it's just you and me. Don't try to bring anybody else into it. But he's not going to stop her.
Yeah.
He just keeps trying to persuade her and persuade her and persuade her. And so finally, after having really bomb dates. Like, there is one, though, that I have to say stood out to me through the whole book, and that's when she went and she met a guy at a coffee shop. Or maybe not a coffee shop, maybe it was for dinner. And the guy had a backpack with him, and they're kind of chit-chatting, talking, and he just pretty much comes out clean. He's like, look, my mom made this profile for me because she thinks I need to get a girlfriend, and I need to live outside of my little niche group of people, and that's really what this is just to appease her. And Kat, you know, goes, instead of going being negative about it, she actually opens up, and she's like, you know what, I'm trying to find a love match, to be honest, but I really appreciate you being upfront with me about all this. She's like, so what exactly that do you, you know, do you do that makes them so, you know, so unhappy with you? And he's like, well, I'm into gaming. And she's like, oh, well, what kind of games do you play? And come to find out, he plays D&D all the time with his buddies in his basement of his parents' house. And, like, he has a bag with him because he's like, look, I was really just going to tell you this straight up. And I knew this wasn't going to last the whole dinner. So I grabbed my, I have my D&D shit right here, and I'm going to go play with my bros.
Oh,
and
my God.
She's like, you know what? I want to come too. This is outside of my comfort zone. Everybody's been telling me I'm a stick in the mud. I never want to have any fun. You seem like a nice guy. I want to come with you, and I want to see what
I
this is.
I want to have a date that joins me to a D&D group.
So she messages her sister to let her know, hey, I'm with this person. Here's his, again, she takes a photo of his ID.
Smart.
And, like, sends all the information to her sister and goes, this is where I'm going to be. This is who I'm with. Blah, blah, blah. Peace out. And they go. And her sister, knowing all of, kind of, like, knowing that there's chemistry between Kat and Prim, messages Prim, like, hey, my sister is on a date right now, and this is where she's at. And he goes, like, he sees red, pretty much. He drives all the way over to this guy's house, is banging on the door, and a little Chinese girl, like, woman opens the door, and she's like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And she has, like, a pixie haircut with blue streaks and is pregnant, and he's all taken aback, like, wait, what's going on? He's like, I'm here for Catherine and blah, 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 and where is she? And he kind of, like, forces himself in the apartment, into the house, and this guy comes around the corner who's also Asian, but he's in his robes, and Prim's like, what the fuck's happening? He's like, oh, Kat's downstairs right now, she's getting ready for her turn. And, like, Prim thinks, like, the worst is gonna happen, like, girls getting banged, rape, or whatever. And he goes down the stairs, and you see this image of Kat with a witch's hat on, rolling dice, and goes, and the sorceress is gonna take a 10, and that's a crit roll, and how much, and I'm gonna use this summoning spell, and I'm gonna blow everything up. And he just, like, stops there in his tracks and is like,
what's happening?
What the fuck is going on? And Kat's having a blast. She knows everybody's name in the room. She's having a grand old time. And Prim is really a jerk about it. He's like, how dare you go and do this? You know, you shouldn't be here by yourself. Because, of course, in their culture, they're not supposed to be by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, there should always be a chaperone with them. And so, like, he kind of gets her on her about that, and she pretty much turns it on her head and goes, look, I wanted to blow off some steam. I wanted to have fun. I'm having fun. I like this.
Yeah.
Where do you get off telling me I can't do this?
Yeah.
And I don't know, that was just one of those moments, because that's us. We're very much those kind of women that are like, we're going to play D&D. We're going to play the bomb-ass sorceress, and we're going to roll for crit and blow everything up, and it's going to be awesome. I don't do it very much anymore, but I did.
Look, there's always time for nerdy stuff.
Yes. I'm just really good that they added that into the book, because this book flew like water. Like, flew like water.
You know what? That's a idiom I've never heard, but I like it. Flowed
like water. Like, everything kind of just went with each other. There was never a point when I was reading this book when I had to stop and be like, okay, hang on, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
Where am I at? Like, it just all flowed so evenly.
I love that cohesiveness.
Yeah. But then again, I feel like if you already have a template and you're just copying pasting this template.
Now, do you feel like it's a copy and paste? Like, that there's, I don't mean to say no ingenuity, but.
I think her ingenuity comes from the fact that this is a South Asian community, so you have those influences of food, culture. Dressing is a lot different. They talk about sari shopping, and there's a part of me that would love to go and try on a sari. Like, yeah. They're just gorgeous.
But you're like, maybe not the cultural appropriation today.
Yeah. I think those are the elements that she took on her own and added into the story. There are snippets between each chapter where it's like a Facebook kind of group, but it's called the Indians Abroad News, which is more like of an Ask Anne kind of thing, where aunties get to talk about issues within the community and maybe how to handle them. So, like, you have all these young kids that want to just live their lives, but they need to stay true to traditions.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Indian Abroad News. So, and then they have a huge group chat with, because everybody's related to everybody. Everybody knows yes. everybody. So all these aunties literally have a group chat where they can literally go, so like, say my auntie says, oh my gosh, I just saw Ashley and Megan at blah, 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 and a boy was talking to them. Your auntie would know. And then the aunties that know your aunties would know. Yes. And like, somehow, some way, it would all get back.
And before you're even done with the conversation, someone's approaching you about it.
Yes. And you have that meddling aspect where you have these women who just want the best for Katarina and her sister, but also knew her mom and knew that there are things that, you know, they would want her daughter to know.
Yeah.
So that's why I say I never felt like it was a copy and paste kind of translation, but I did feel like all of the clear needed steps for the Taming of the Shrew
were there. Okay.
There's a moment towards the end where everything escalates and they're at her sister's kind of like pre-wedding day. Basically, in the Indian culture, they have multiple days of partying.
Okay.
This would be the equivalency to our traditional, like,
like, rehearsal dinner?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
But it's a big party.
Okay. That they're going to have food and drinking and all that stuff. And everybody shows up. And basically, something gets to light that they're not actually engaged to be married, that it was all a fluke.
Oh, it just comes out?
It just comes out. It doesn't even make sense how it comes out, and I don't remember it because it wasn't even that, like, necessary of the plot. Just know that it happens. And her dad gets really upset, and
because the whole time he's still considering selling her the house at this point, right?
Yeah. Okay. So he's gonna give them the money, her dowry, pretty much, is what it is that they've set aside.
And then she's gonna use it to buy the house.
Yes. So everything kind of comes to light and wind of everything, and her dad starts screaming at Pim and telling him, like, you know, he's a con man and all this, that, and the other. And Pim pretty much just loses it on this family and goes, I don't understand how you can have such an amazing person in your family and treat her like shit and degrade her all the time, and you put this princess wannabe up on a pedestal. And he just basically, like, everything he's been bottling up about this family, he just loses. He ends up, like, him and Katarina's dad get into a fist fight. They fist it out. His bros pull him away. He's screaming all this horrendous shit. And he turns to Katarina's sister's going to be husband and goes, you know what? I feel sorry for you because you're marrying into this bullshit, and I guarantee you, after all of it's gone and done and said, you're going to be miserable.
Wow.
And that's on you. And he kind of, like, storms off. And at this point in the story, and even in the play, Katerina has changed so much as a person. She's not as harsh as she was. She's much more understanding, and she softens throughout the book. And she has this conversation with her dad, basically in her shed out back, which has the car, which is now being, like, restorational processes started on it. And her and her dad have a heart-to-heart, basically. And he's like, this was never meant to hurt you or upset you. You know, I did this because I thought it was the right thing to do. Because I love this house. I don't want to lose the memory of mom. I feel like everybody's just ready to, like, just get rid of her. And it was really nice reading that whole, like, moment, because there are things between a father and daughter that I find really hard sometimes to talk about, you know, especially when it comes down to, you know, you as a daughter knowing that I'm an adult now, I need to make decisions, and, you know, your father always sees you as the little 5-year-old running around with pigtails, and he wants to always protect that. So it's very hard, and that's kind of where that dynamic is right there between Kat and her dad, and they're just having that heart-to-heart going, and her dad realizing, you know, you are a very strong individual person, and I never meant to make you feel like you couldn't be that person, because, you know, I want you to be that person.
Yeah.
And it ends up coming out that, you know, he's just going to give her the house. Like, you know what, you love this house, your mom would want you to have this house, so I'm just going to just give you the house. And she's like, but I was going to pay for it. And he's like, just don't worry about it anymore. It's yours. Like, this is, I'm going to live here up until this point. I'm going to move out. It's yours.
Yeah.
So that kind of, like, resolves the issue of having to pretend to be married to Prim now. But at this point in the storyline, they have feelings for each other. It's very, very noticeable that they like each other, that there's something more there than what meets the eye. And you have, I've started to notice in romance books, right at the end, and there's other authors that make fun of this, the grand gesture moment. The man always has to do something big to show that he loves her and, like, wants to be with her. And it's flipped because, you know, Prim's not the main character of the book, it's Kat. And Kat needs to make this grand gesture to make Prim understand that she really does love him. And so he's on his talk show. It's his last day on his talk show because he's opening his, you know,
clinic.
Right. He got his sponsorships. Everything is solid and good there. And Kat rigs his show to basically the prompter starts saying things, and Prim is reading the prompter, and he's like, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah, this is not what I wrote.
This is not how I wrote this. And then Kat steps out behind a veil of flowers and is talking to Prim and basically explaining how she does have feelings for him, and she knows he has feelings for her, and, you know, all of this stuff kind of just comes to light. And she kind of poses it to the audience, you know, like, do you think we should get together? But she doesn't realize the audience is literally her whole family.
Of course.
Because somehow they worked that around behind her back.
Okay.
That's just really weird.
It seems like a bit of plot convenience, but I'll take it.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, they end up getting together and everything like that. It's very cute. It ends very cutely. I will say, because Katerina and Prim have friends, like, really close BFF friends, they all kind of, like, correlate with each other. And there's a possibility, I don't know if she's going to do this or not, it makes it sound like there's going to be other books within this kind of overarching series.
Within that world.
And I would really like to see Bodhi and Vera get together. They were kind of the main friends. And there was already kind of something in the books, in this book, where you kind of noticed, like, they're really friendly with each other. But nothing happens.
Yeah.
So I think that would be really interesting to see that be, like, the next book. And then I was trying to guess, like, because it's going to be all Shakespeare book, Shakespeare themes. I was like, maybe that one will be, like, Romeo and Juliet, because they kind of have the star-crossed lover kind of feel to them, where Brody is a very wealthy lawyer. He's very good at his job. And Vera comes from, like, a hard-working class kind of, like, family. So I was like, ooh, that could be kind of fun. Midsummer Night Dream, that would be really fun. The other two that pair up have a hate-to-love romance in them, and I, since they already did Taming of the Shrew, which is what Shakespeare has, is his hate, you know, enemies to lovers, I would have to kind of feel like maybe this is going to be like Twelfth Night, if they were to do that.
Okay.
Twelfth Night's kind of hate to lovers, too.
A little bit, yeah.
And I can see that fitting well into the South Asian kind of feeling of it, because it's 12 days. The play actually takes place over the 12 days.
Yeah.
Leading up to the winter solstice. So I feel like that would be maybe a good one.
Definitely.
To maybe do there too. But let's talk spicy factor, because y'all are probably going, Ashley,
where's the spice?
Yeah, where's the spice? You can't just tell me it's bland. Because it's the Taming of the Shrew. There's abilities to be very naughty.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, it has a 4 out of 5 on the spicy factor.
Really?
Oh, yes.
With just that one scene, or are there multiple scenes?
So there's two main scenes. There's
that first one in the bar.
Well, I wouldn't even say that's really a sex scene, to be honest. That's just like, you see it lead up to that point, and then you get flashbacks through all these books of them having the conversation at the bar. So they'll be doing something in current time point, and somebody will say something, and then that person will have a flashback to the bar.
Oh, okay.
And like, it'll lead up into it. But no, it's a finger sex into actual like
sex.
There's a very nice shower scene in chapter 20, and then there's also chapter 26, which I just wrote chapter 26 all. Woo!
Woo! Bring a fan.
I was very shocked that she did 3 different scenes, because I would not have expected that.
But it was good.
But it was very good. It's on the hood of a car. It's in a shower. And then it's just back at his place. And we're just going to go for it, man. We're just going to go for it. And wow. I thoroughly enjoyed this book. This is my first 5 out of 5 that I've given. I know, right? This is the first 5 out of 5 book that I've given for the whole year. And I loved it. I loved it so, so much. And I'm typically hit or miss when it comes to Asian influencing writing. Sometimes I can find that they can be very, very dry. American Panda, I've tried reading that twice, and it's very dry. Rent a Boyfriend, again, by the same author. Had a really great storyline, but I find it so dry. Then again, these are YA picks, but The Donut Trap, very dry too. Like, they maybe missed the opportunity to make it fun.
Yeah, progress the plot more or develop the characters more. They spend so much time on the backstory.
I wouldn't say developing the characters isn't an issue, because the characters get developed. I just feel like they go, okay, we're going to make a romance book, and it's Asian influence. It has Asian, you know, background stuff, so it has to be so very strict and so very tight-laced. Yes. And I'm sitting here going, but I've read other books that are also South Asian, Nisha Sharma, or can't remember the other lady that I read. She did The Dating Plan. I can't remember what her name is, but those are all very really fun books.
Yeah,
all have amazing ratings for me. The spice factor is always a 3 or 4, and I'm just like, I don't understand how you can go from that, and it's really great. It's still, you still get the South Asian influence. You still get all of that context, but you get that added level of fun. Yeah. And then you have these books where you're just like, what?
Yeah. Too much.
I don't know, but...
But this is a 5!
This is a 5! The first 5 of 2022!
Wow. I cannot even believe that. We are already almost to July, and we're just getting to our first 5-star book.
Well, for me.
Well, for you.
You give 5 stars out like it's candy.
Not anymore. I feel very cynical about books lately, which I know that we will get to, you know, in our next episode as well, but... I feel like you are so much, not nicer, not even more free. I don't know how to word this. I just feel like...
Okay, are you a Simon or are you a...
I feel like I'm a Simon recently about everything. I feel like I just like nitpick the tiniest little things. Yeah. Like if you guys remember a couple episodes back, I talked about Zodiac Academy and it is huge on TikTok, and a bunch of my friends are obsessed with it, or BookTok, whatever. I know it's a specific thing, but anyway, huge. Gets great reviews on Goodreads. I think it has like a 4.6 or something.
And you know what?
And I hated it. I did not hardly have any redeemable nice things to say about it. Yeah. And I'm starting to wonder if it's me. Oh. I'm just saying, like, your review was nice, had very nice things to say. 5-star review, excellent spice factor.
Yeah.
And I am starting to wonder whether if I had read the same book as you, would I have given it the same review?
I don't know. Okay, so let's just pose a question. Out of all the Shakespearean plays that he wrote that are romance or tragedy, because I'm going to throw them in the same, romance and tragedy, I'm throwing in the same boat because... I feel like they're kind of the same, but they're not the same, but they're kind of the same.
Yes.
Which one is your favorite?
I'm a really big fan of King Lear.
That's a historical.
I know, it's a historical. I'm just
that's
trying
not,
to think.
That's not a tragedy or a romance.
I also really like Macbeth.
Again.
I know.
Actually, no.
That's a tragedy.
That's a tragedy.
I was going to say.
Huh.
I have never actually read Taming of the Shrew Shakespeare style, but I love 10 Things I Hate About You. One of my all-time favorite movies.
I love that one, too.
I definitely think I would like the story. Midsummer Night's Dream, I know, is not a tragedy or... Well, it's sort of
it's
lovey.
A romance.
Yeah, it's comedy-ish. But
it's a comedy romance.
I love Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah. I'm my two biggies are this, The Twelfth Night and Taming the Shrew, just because... The telling of those stories focus on really strong, independent women who are trying to break out of the norm of life. And that's just me to a T. Unfortunately, my family probably doesn't agree with me on that. They're like, oh, no, you have great family values, and you're just really quiet and docile. Yeah, that's how I act around you guys.
Yeah.
Sorry about your
love. Totally different person.
Yeah, I'm a totally different person outside of that world. But I really am... I really enjoyed this book. I don't know. You know how sometimes you find new authors by happenstance and they're just like,
wow. Yes.
Nisha Sharma was one of those for me. I'm now going, I will probably purchase everything this woman will write. She can do no wrong by me now. All because of this one book. And it's her first book.
Yes.
That's what really makes me go, okay, you have my attention.
Yeah.
Because this is your first book out, and you knocked it out of the park. Anything that comes after this is just chef's kiss. Ugh, loves it. Loves it, loves it, loves it.
So, if you like this review, go pick up Dating Dr. Dill. Also a very popular book on BookTok. 5 stars from Ashley.
Yeah.
So, let us know what you guys think. As always, you can follow us on Instagram at LifeBooksWine, or you can also email us at LifeBooksWine@gmail.com. Give us your recommendations. Let us know if you agree or disagree with what we are discussing.
Yeah.
Did I mention recommendations? Because I love recommendations.
I do too. I feel like our Instagram or peeps out there are giving us really great ideas about what we should be picking up. And I know you took advice from one of them, and I actually took advice from one of them. So hopefully we'll be able to get to those books.
Yes.
we don't want to spoil anything, so we're not giving that away, because we guarantee we'll probably talk about those at later time.
I definitely know I will be talking about at least one of them very soon.
Okay. Well, that wraps up for today's episode, guys. I'm Ashley.
I'm Megan.
And this is Life Books and Wine.